Tom Friedman is calling it the sharing economy, renting other people's cars, homes, lawnmowers. And Jason Tant says it's changing our traditional system of trust. Jason is executive editor of Wired magazine. As children, we were told, don't talk to strangers. His cover story is titled, Trust Me, How Airbnb, Lyft, and Tinder Are Teaching Us to Love Strangers. Lyft's slogan is, your friend with a car, you sit in the front seat. He joins us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco with more. And Jason, tick through the sites where money changes hands between strangers.
Sure. Well, most famously probably is Airbnb, in which you can rent a room or potentially a stranger's entire house, get keys to their house and stay there for a while. There's also things like UberX or Lyft, services in which strangers will come up and pick you up like a taxi and take you where you want to go.
I understand you arrived at the studio at KQED today in a Lyft ride.
I did. That's true. I had never taken a Lyft before I started working on this story. I thought the whole thing seemed a little creepy to me, honestly. You know, they drive up. There's a little pink mustache on the car, so you know that it's a Lyft. And you get into the front seat, and you give the driver a fist bump, and then the two of you chat or whatever, and he drives you to wherever you want to go. These are people who, you know, they don't have medallions. They don't have special licenses. They've been approved through the system. And turns out I actually quite like it, and I really do enjoy, you know, the guy who drove me over was from Algeria, and we were talking about the World Cup and who he was following, and it's a little bit of humanity in what was previously a fairly impersonal commercial transaction.
Well, we'll talk more about why that's important to people and also how it's made as safe as it can be for you, but tell us more about what we're doing. We're dropping dogs off at people's houses.
Yeah. So that's a site called Dog Vacay, where instead of leaving your dog at a kennel, you actually leave it at somebody's house. There's something called Feastly, in which chefs open up their homes. They put invitations up online, and people can sort of reserve spots and then come and have a dinner party at their house. There are sites like Relay Rides, in which you can rent somebody's car. You can just go knock on their door. They'll hand you their keys, and off you go, and you take their car for the day. It's expanding to encompass a lot of different kinds of services and goods that, you know, previously required a storefront.
Well, you can rent someone's car or their boat or their house or even their power tools. That's
yes.
Boatbound, HomeAway, and Zilox?
Yes, Zilox. Yes, I think that's right. Yes.
Well, so all of this is going on. And we know that the internet, as you write, was about hooking people up virtually. This whole world that we're describing is about hooking people up physically. You alluded to it when you talked about how you enjoyed the ride in Lyft, by the way, L-Y-F-T. But you spoke to an NYU professor who said this might be responding to a need that we have to get more physical with people.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the book Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam. So the notion of that was, you know, people don't have shared activities anymore. Everybody goes home and goes off into their own little warrens, or they're working all the time. And so these sort of community activities don't happen anymore. This is potentially a counter movement to that trend. The idea that we need social interaction, that we need to talk to people, that we need to sort of feel connected to the people and the world around us. But, you know, everything from the third space of Starbucks, right, where people can go and work in a sort of community environment, this is almost an extension of that.
Well, so this NYU professor, Arun Sundararajan, tells you that this is sort of bridging a gap that was almost created by the internet, that we weren't having physical contact with people because we were having all this virtual contact with them. But on the other hand, you also point to polls that show that people say, when asked, that they trust people less. You know, how is it that we're getting in cars with strangers or giving our cars to strangers if polls show Americans really are pulling back on how much they trust other people?
Well, I think there's the question of what your stated beliefs are and what your behavior shows. And let's be clear, you know, Lyft is not serving 80% of Americans, right? It's still quite possible that the overwhelming majority of people consider themselves not particularly trustworthy of strangers. I think that's pretty ingrained in a lot of our society. In fact, if you look at how our economy has developed after the Industrial Revolution, the whole idea is building systems so you don't have to know or trust the people you're interacting with. But when there are systems that are put in place to help safeguard your interactions and help give you information about the people who are providing these services to you, it turns out that people are actually willing to go that extra mile once that bridge is breached. I mean, if it were really true that we didn't trust people, Airbnb wouldn't exist.
Well, you take us through the history of trust in America. You know that Americans used to be in small towns, and so everybody knew everybody, and you trusted everybody. When that changed in the mid-19th century and people started moving into the big cities, the person who owned the corner store replaced by corporations. this system that you're talking about that was put in place was the system of regulations, the government. Now we're into this, back into this unregulated world of interaction. How is it made safe?
Well, there are a couple of things. Basically, there's a kind of insurance. If you rent your house out on Airbnb and someone comes in and trashes the place, there's $1 million guarantee that they'll replace any damage up to $1 million. That didn't always exist. Early on, there were a couple of bad experiences.
And people's houses got trashed.
people's houses got trashed. That's right. And there was a big kerfuffle about it. And in response, they announced that they were going to have, I think it was at first $50,000 of insurance, which they later upped to $1 million. And now pretty much every service like this has some insurance coverage. There are questions from insurance commissioners, among other people, as to whether that's sufficient. But that is one response to getting people comfortable.
Well, in fact, there are a lot of questions from a lot of people about the new e-commerce. Jason Tance of Wired Magazine, his recent cover story is Trust Me, How Airbnb, Lyft, and Tinder Are Teaching Us to Love Strangers. You're listening to Here and Now. Technology companies like Airbnb, the home and apartment rental site, and Uber, the car sharing service that lets people order up a ride on their smartphone, have been in very public spats with cities and traditional businesses who feel threatened by this new model of unregulated e-commerce that's not held to the same regulations, doesn't pay the same taxes or fees. The companies take commissions from people who rent things from each other, but there are also questions about how safe that is. We've been talking to Jason Tance. He's executive editor of Wired Magazine. His recent cover story is Trust Me, How Airbnb, Lyft, and Tinder Are Teaching Us to Love Strangers. And Jason, let's go back to Airbnb. It's fascinating. They also have measures in place to prevent problems. You mentioned insurance policies on the homes being rented. And they monitor online exchanges between people conducting these transactions. So, for instance, if somebody uses the words Western Union in an email, in an exchange, it might mean that they're trying to circumvent the official system and pay without using Airbnb's secure system. So these companies are trying to somewhat self-regulate.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, there is this sense among some critics of the sharing economy that these companies are just rapacious and they don't care what happens to their customers. But of course, that's not true, right? If a customer has a miserable experience and it becomes widespread, no one's going to use their service. So the entire transaction that happens on Airbnb happens within Airbnb's system. The website and the photos and any communication between a renter and a property owner, that all occurs through Airbnb servers. So they can run all that data. They assign actually a trust rating to every single transaction. And if that trust rating is too low, it's flagged and a human has to look into it and follow up on it. And it can be something like, this person's been getting an unusual number of bookings from the same person. Maybe this is actually money laundering instead of a legitimate rental. To this person may not be who they say they're going to be. And yes, they have a staff to both follow up on complaints and claims, and also to prevent them from occurring in the first place.
Yeah. Well, you also write about relay rides. This is where people literally hand their car over to somebody to use. And you say they discovered something interesting, that when people didn't see the people that were going to take their cars, it would be like Zipcar. So you
right.
didn't really see the owner of the car. It was one thing. But when the company changed and the car owner and the car user met each other face to face, something interesting happened.
What they found was there were results in terms of people's satisfaction and also in terms of the number of claims. Renters treated cars better when they had the opportunity to meet the owner face to face. And both renter and owner expressed greater satisfaction when they were able to meet the other party face to face than when it was an anonymous transaction.
Yeah. Well, that takes us back to something you pointed out. We constantly are doing things not knowing who's on the other side. We go to hotels. We don't know who owns the hotel. We don't know how good it is. And yet we know that somewhere there's some kind of regulation, some kind of requirement of that hotel that they provide us a certain service. But maybe that requirement, that government requirement, will be replaced by this sense of, in this case, you do kind of know the person that you're renting a room from in Airbnb. There's huge pictures and profiles. Maybe that will make people be more respectful of the thing that they're sharing.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, both parties are often graded here. So when I take a Lyft, I get rated by my driver. I'm not the only one doing the rating here. So it actually behooves me to behave well and to behave respectfully, as you suggest. You know, there is a lot of talk about regulation right now and what the proper role of regulation is as regards these new marketplaces. And regulation, honestly, serves a number of purposes. One of them is safeguarding a customer's experience. And I do think you can make the argument, and a lot of proponents of the sharing economy do, that it is more effective to have somebody who is being constantly graded by everybody who goes through their house, for instance, in the case of Airbnb, than it is to have an inspector who does spot checks once every 2 years or something and can be persnickety about various violations that honestly don't have that much to do with safety. I think you can argue that these rating systems could conceivably solve that problem. Now, regulation does have other functions as well, including sort of macroeconomic functions like, you know, how many hotels can you have in a neighborhood? And that is something that I think is a tougher question, honestly. I don't begrudge people who get upset because they're living downstairs from what they thought was an apartment and turns out to be a hotel. I think that is a tough issue, and that is one that may require more, you know, government action.
Or cab drivers or cab companies who feel that, you know, they're paying taxes and doing all the things that they're required to by the city, and then here comes some upstart company that's not a part of that.
Yeah, I have a lot of sympathy for that. And Airbnb has come out and said, you know what, we will be paying hotel taxes. We will be paying those expenditures that other licensed hotels have to pay, at least in the form of taxation. And I think that makes sense.
I think that's still a question about Uber that's trying to make inroads in different cities.
Yeah. I mean, they're tough questions. So there's the question of, are these guys playing on a level playing field? There's also the question of, why does that playing field exist? You know, and sometimes they are just sort of protectionist rackets. Sometimes those playing fields exist for a good reason. So I don't think it's as simple as saying, you know, oh, these guys just want to run roughshod over these regulations that protect the populace. On the other hand, I do think it's a fair critique to say that taxi drivers, for instance, aren't going to be able to compete with companies that don't have to play by the same rules that they do.
Well, meanwhile, other questions people might have, most of these companies have really set up requirements for people who participate. For instance, if you're going to be a Lyft driver, you've got to pass a background and DMV check. You've got to get approved by a mentor. Dog vacay hosts go through a vetting process as well. It includes training videos, quizzes, you know, telephone interview. Money doesn't exchange hands in most of these cases. It goes through an online system, so there's no, you know, cash out there. A lot of people worry about that. Meanwhile, you've taken a Lyft ride. You kind of liked it, sitting up front, talking with the driver. What do the people who do this say to you? There's a young girl who became a Lyft driver. Is she ever scared about who she might throw the door open to and let into her car?
You know, I have asked every Lyft driver. I've probably been on a couple dozen Lyft rides at this point, if not more. And nobody has ever expressed any fear for their safety. Everybody always says, you know, they know that the person has a track record. They have their credit card information on file. They're GPS tracked wherever they go. So no, it really has been a non-issue. Now, another element of this is right now, this is a pretty self-contained community here in San Francisco. San Francisco is a very wealthy city. The people who use Lyft tend to be, you know, fairly well-off and forward-thinking, you know, young professionals. A Lyft driver, as much as told me, you know, I'm not sure I would be comfortable doing this in Philly. He came from Philly. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is slightly troubling, this idea that as long as it's all a sort of self-selected group of people, they feel safe with one another. But, you know, does that apply as much when it's open to a more diverse populace? That could be a little trickier.
Interesting question. Jason Tance, executive editor of Wired Magazine. His article, Trust Me, From Airbnb to Tinder. Tinder, by the way?
Tinder is sort of like OkCupid in that it's an online dating app, but it's very quick. You post photos from your Facebook profile and you just flip through and say, you know, yes or no, basically. And if two people both sort of approve of one another, it will arrange an in-person match. It's not normally thought of as part of the sharing economy exactly, but as I tried to explain in the piece, it ends up operating by a lot of the same logic, especially if you think of dating as a marketplace.
So from Airbnb to Tinder, the sharing economy rewiring the way we interact with each other. Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And by the way, Tinder, we're well aware one of the founders has been suspended after another co-founder sued him for sexual harassment and sex discrimination. So an internal problem there. But how about you? Have you used any of these e-commerce companies? Let us know here and now at